Welcome to Drink Beer Think Beer, the podcast that gets to the bottom of every pint. I'm John Hall. Beer and weather together on this episode of the podcast as I talk with Boston meteorologist Eric Fisher. But first, please go visit allaboutbeer.com. There, you can find original articles, reviews, news, insights, and podcasts. You can listen to shows like Brewer to Brewer and the All About Beer podcast simply by searching All About Beer wherever you listen to shows. And don't forget, you can follow All About Beer on Instagram, Threads X, and Facebook at All About Beer. And to keep up with all of the smoked beer news and releases, make sure you check out This Week in Rauch Beer by searching the group on Facebook or following at TW Rauch Beer on X, Threads, and Instagram. Glassware and apparel is available too on allaboutbeer.com/merch. This show and all of the work we do, it's supported by you. Please go visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer. A few bucks goes a long way to help keep the content fresh and to fund writers, photographers, creators, and editors. And if you'd like to learn more about advertising on this show, please email info@allaboutbeer.com. I get to speak with a lot of passionate people on this show, and admittedly, it's usually about beer or people in the brewing industry, but passion is passion. So I was intrigued when a friend suggested I reach out to Eric Fisher, a meteorologist in Boston who delivers the forecast with zeal and who on his X profile lists beer as one of his passions. Fisher is chief meteorologist for CBS Boston's WBZ TV News and anchors weather segments weeknights at 5, 6, and 11, as well as the news at 8 and 9 o'clock on MyTV 38, also in Boston. He's also a frequent contributor to CBS News, often found reporting on breaking severe weather across the country on the CBS Evening News. Born and raised in New England, he says that there are few places on earth that produce weather like this little corner of the U.S. It offers the challenges of blockbuster snowstorms, hurricanes, tornadoes, heat waves, frigid cold snaps, dramatic seasonal shifts, and more. He vividly remembers Memorial Day of 1995 as a day that helped solidify his path as a meteorologist when an infamous tornado ripped through Great Barrington in the Berkshires. Glued to the red warnings crawling across the TV screen and watching the radar, his career in weather was born. He joined WBZ TV News from the Weather Channel in Atlanta, where he spent 3 years as a meteorologist. He produced and delivered national forecasts and contributed to numerous live reports on extreme weather for the Weather Channel, NBC Nightly News, Today, and on MSNBC. He is a supporter of science and learning. He's also a member of both the Mount Washington Observatory and the Blue Hill Observatory in New England. He also serves on the ambassador board for the New England Aquarium. He's a graduate of the State University of New York in Albany. That's a SUNY school, with a BS degree in atmospheric science and a minor in mathematics. That's Bachelor of Science, by the way, not the other kind of BS. Beer and weather can be great unifiers. It gives strangers something to talk about and all of us shared experiences. Turns out that Fisher and I actually have more in common than just a fondness of pints. Weather is also responsible for my career trajectory, as you'll hear. Here's our conversation. So it's interesting. I was reading your bio and I had flashbacks to the very beginning of my career. So I'm sitting here in this chair solely because of the blizzard of 96, which hit the New York metro area in January of 1996, right? Up in your area as well. But it was the first time that I could remember, and I was 16 at the time, but the first time that I could remember the television stations in New York going wall to wall with coverage of reporters standing out in the field saying, it's snowing right now. And it's like young, impressionable me. I'm like, holy shit, that's an amazing job. You get to stand outside in the snow and tell people that it's snowing. And so I put a resume together at 16, of all of 16, and sent it to every television station in the metro area. And NJN Public Television, which no longer exists thanks to Chris Christie, who's a terrible human being, they're the only ones who got back to me. And they gave me an internship the summer that I was 16, and that started me on my career in news, which got me to where I am now. And in my years as a beat reporter, I got to cover blizzards and stand outside of them, and it's miserable. Like it's
no, it's not. That's the good stuff. People People always say, "Oh, you got the short straw to go out in the storm." I'm like, I want to be out in the storm and be in the
You'd prefer to be
studio.
outside standing with the yardstick showing people how deep it is in Dorchester versus in the studio, the
Well, I
nice, warm,
think,
comfy studio?
there are grades of outdoor reporting. So it's usually a little bit different. There's a difference between a reporter who's being sent out probably against their will because they'd rather be telling like a different story that day, but they have to go sit out with the yardstick versus a meteorologist who like, this is your thing. This is what you want to do. And to me, it's always easier to talk about weather when you're feeling the weather and experiencing it. And it gives a little bit more to the moments, And usually a meteorologist is enjoying that moment versus the reporter who's being like punished to go stand outside all day on the side of the highway talking about travel.
I definitely did have a newspaper job in my career where I was on the bad side of the wrong editor for a while, and every day it was the weather story. And it was, going into the paper every day. And some days it's just 70 and sunny. And it's like, that's fine, but how am I going to spin a story off of this? And then it's raining, and then you're standing outside talking to people in the rain, and you get those weird, looks backwards. What do you think of the weather today? Is there a type of weather system or type of precipitation that comes through? What do you look forward to covering?
Back in the day when I was younger, and snowstorms were number one. Like when you're a kid, like the wonder of snow in winter before you have to worry about bills and plowing and clearing the roads and getting to work and figuring out childcare and all the things that happen when you're an adult. And how that goes. Snow was number one. Plus, it was the day off of school potential. So back in, sixth grade, I was giving, alerts to all the other students, all my friends, like, here's the snow day off potential tomorrow. Here's what we're looking at. Here's the timing. Here's what I think they're going to do. Over time, I've gotten more into more thunderstorms and severe weather. I feel like it's very nuanced. It's kind of more of curious forecasting where you're trying to figure out basically when a pot that's just simmering is going to start to boil and where it's going to boil. So I don't know. Severe weather has gotten more interesting to me over time versus the snowstorms. And part of that is probably just getting older. But the other part of it is you get the most ire over snowstorms. Like you're just stressed to the max the entire run up to any time it's going to snow because people care so much about snow and treat every inch like it's the end of the world. And people will probably say back to me, the meteorologists and the news make it seem like it's the end of the world. And most of the time, when you actually listen to a forecast, a forecaster is just giving it to you how it's going to be. But just the thought that something might go wrong. You never sleep the night before a snowstorm because you're just wondering, is a quarter of the area going to overperform or underperform? And what emails or tweets are you going to get about that? It's a different beast now than it used to be.
I wanted to talk about that. I mean, it's Twitter and or X or whatever, and all social media has made it easier than ever for people to interact with people in the news media. And I like that, give and take, and I like that back and forth. But I don't think anybody gets it as bad as weather folks. Because if you are wrong by a quarter of an inch, or if you are saying, hey, it's going to be, really nice tomorrow, and then all of a sudden something pops up and it's not, people blame you for the weather. Like you're the one who's in control of it.
I don't know if we get it the worst. I mean, we're definitely very public facing, and I feel like a lot of meteorologists were they're kind of early adopters of social media. I think a lot of social media, especially on Twitter and Facebook, the meteorologists were one of the first to really get on there and take advantage of the platform because weather is kind of a cooperative thing. It's a two-way street. It was great to get reports from people, hear what was going on in different towns. It was a great flow of information. As much as we get it when something doesn't go right, I'd hate to be a pro athlete who, people are sending you the most horrific things if you miss a kick or drop a pass or, you get called for holding or whatever the case may be. Or God forbid you're in politics. I don't even want to talk about that.
Well, yeah,
What a,
we yeah.
yeah, that you don't want to
Most
get
of those
into
guys
that.
deserve it, though. So that's, yeah.
But, I do enjoy a lot of it. I've met a lot of interesting people on social media. There's always going to be bad eggs. There's going to be people that frustrate you. But in a way, it's also less personal than it used to be, if that makes sense.
How
Because when I
so?
started, you'd get a phone call,
Right.
and someone, some person, some live voice on the other line would berate you And it felt a little bit more personal, where you can kind of shrug off some troll on Twitter with no picture, and you look at their feed and it's all just like saying terrible things to everybody. And you're just like, well, this is just a sad person. And you kind of move on. Yeah, fielding the live phone call was kind of a different experience, but that's not really how people interact much anymore. But most people under 40 wouldn't answer the phone unless it was their mother calling.
That's also true. I remember when I worked at the Indy Star, they would put your name and phone number at the bottom of every article. And there was a guy whose name escapes me at the moment. But at the end of every article, it would say, call Indy Star reporter John Hall at, and then give my phone number. And as this guy would read the newspaper, he would just call to check in. Like he was taking it as a command, like he got to the bottom of the article. And just call and be like, this is Bob Smith and read the piece. And it's like, thanks, Bob. And then you'd hang up and you'd hear the phone ring around the newsroom as other people were getting the call from him. And then if you didn't get the call from him, it's like, oh, I didn't write a compelling enough story for him to get to the bottom. And so there's a different kind of psychology to it.
You definitely have some very different, interesting interactions when you work in the news. It's a slice of life. You get exposed to a lot of different people.
Are people appreciative, right? I often think about people, yelling or calling or, giving you the business on Twitter for a missed forecast or something that isn't, to the letter of what you might have said on the 11 o'clock broadcast at 6 a.m. the next day. Is there the other side of the coin? Do you get the appreciative or if the weather's nice and does what you said it's going to do, then it's just okay, you did the job and
Yeah,
not
we
necessarily extra
definitely.
thanks.
Yeah, I think even more so when things don't go right, you'll get a big, pile of comments from people who are saying, hey, you know what? Some things didn't go the way you expected, but I appreciate the work you do and the information along the way. Like that happens, of course.
Does it
There's just a
happen a
lot of
lot?
emphasis on, negativity from a lot of people. I mean, unfortunately, the way humans work, a lot of the time, like if you're talking to your friends about, your relationship at home, do you always tell them how wonderful it is, or do you mostly bring up when something's pissing you off? Like, you talk about the thing that makes you angry. Maybe we all should focus a little bit more on the things that are really going well. And there definitely are people who do that. You can't dwell on the negativity. I've tried over time to, just ignore when things are just unnecessarily mean. And there are times where things are wrong, and trust me, no one's pleased about that. It doesn't happen often. Weather's probably the most successful future forecasting business that exists, and it's free. You can go listen to anyone's opinion anytime, and you're probably going to be right 85, 90% of the time all year long. But people will remember those 10% because they're usually high impact or not events. But if you had a stock advisor who was right 90% of the time, you'd be filthy rich. And if you were betting on sports games and you followed one analyst who was making a call about where to gamble every night, and they were right 90% of the time, you'd be filthy rich. Like 90, 85, even 70% in predicting the future, that's not something that happens in almost any discipline.
How, since you've started, how has the technology, how has the understanding of weather improved? And also, how more unpredictable has it gotten with climate change over the years?
The technology has definitely changed a lot. I mean, it used to be, I remember watching the news even in high school, and at the 11 o'clock news, you could hear the printer going off in the background. And, the chief meteorologist would say, new information's coming in right now. And you literally had to like watch each line print out, you tear it off, and you go, oh, the snowstorm's coming, or oh man, we're getting missed this time. And that was kind of the state of technology. Now people ask, like, when does new information come in? And the answer is, constantly. I mean, every hour, some new bit of data or new model run is coming in. So it's a constant feed, which is probably not great for my mental health because I'm constantly looking at new things instead of twice a day just checking. Okay, here's the new stuff. The resolution has gotten a lot better, meaning that instead of kind of coarse ideas about the weather, the target has gotten smaller. If you look at a forecast for a snowstorm in the 80s or even the 90s, a map might just say like 10 to 24 inches. And that would
Yeah,
be
it's a pretty big
across the
range.
area. Yeah, basically, it's going to snow tomorrow. Now we're trying to hit 2 to 3 inch windows. So in terms of success rate, it might often feel the same as in the past, but it's because your target is so much smaller. It's like trying to throw a baseball into the side of a house versus into a catcher's mitt. You're still trying to hit your target, but that target is very different than it used to be in the past. What I usually say is that what's changed the most is that we can see things coming, the potential of things coming, 1 to 2 weeks in advance. And
Wow.
that's way out. I mean that did not exist up until the last 10 or so years. But the fine details of what you absolutely need, the sensible weather forecast, which dictates what do I do? How should I prepare for this event? That's still like 1 to 2 days out. The details might be a little bit more, like I said, more fine resolution, but in terms of, the snowfall forecast, the window for that really hasn't pushed out all that much. And that makes it difficult to talk about because now you have to talk about something a week in advance because it's out there. It's on the internet. People are talking about it. You see it. But you really don't have the information you gotta have to make your plans until a day or two out. And so that's, I think, what we need to work on the most in the future. People are gonna wanna know, okay, there's thunderstorms tomorrow, but what towns will be hit by the thunderstorms? Okay, there'll be a snow band in the snowstorm. Where exactly is that snow band going to be? That's the challenge.
Yeah. And there's some of those Dopplers, right, that get down to the street level. I know there's a station here in New York that likes to do that now and again. They like to bust out, here you are on Main Street in Edison, and you're getting hit with that band of snow right now, as opposed to, which again didn't exist when I was growing up as well. It was just,
Yeah.
North
When
Jersey
radar got
maps. Yeah.
updated, around 2011 to dual pole, that really increased the resolution for us. And that's also why we see more tornado warnings now, because you're seeing more of the storm, more of the structure. In the past, you would just warn the really obvious signatures. Now you're warning everything with potential, which is good and bad. It means you don't get caught off guard very often, but there are more false alarms because not every storm does produce a tornado. But you can see the structure a lot better now, and you get new updates every 1 minute instead of every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Has weather become more severe in the last couple of years? I don't know if this is just me getting older, people start or talking about it more. We have this technology, so you can pinpoint it. It feels like we didn't have this level of thunderstorms or this level of, just the beatings of snow that people get, or even just the threat of tornadoes. Where I am in Jersey, and I know you get them out in the Berkshires, and you get them in other places around Massachusetts, but it feels like it's happening more and more these days. Is that the case, or is that just because we're all just consuming information 24/7?
I think there's a little bit of both that goes into that. I think it's important to understand that there's always been extreme weather and extreme events and huge floods and huge fires and huge snowstorms. Like that has always been occurring and always will. What sticks out to me are a couple of things. One is what you mentioned, that we just have access to every nook and cranny. I mean, there were days, even just 20 years ago, where if a tornado was somewhere in Vermont, New Hampshire, or Maine, you might not hear about it for a couple of days. It would take a farmer to go out in a field or a hiker to go, oh, a tornado came through here. You didn't have a drone flying over it because you had a great radar signature and someone, took video over it 30 minutes later and everyone had their smartphones, so they all uploaded that video. I mean, you see everything. Nothing goes unnoticed now. And that definitely changes perception. One thing that I have noticed, and we certainly have some data to back it up, is what we kind of call an increased hydrological cycle, meaning when it rains a lot now. When it snows a lot. And when it's dry, it's really dry. Now, I think we're seeing more precipitation extremes where these heavy precipitation events in particular, and the Northeast has seen the biggest increase of anyone in the country, they stick out to me. These 2 inch plus rainfall events, and then we've had a number of 8 inch plus rainfall events in the last couple of years. It definitely feels like, seems like with the data as well, that we are seeing heavier rainfall in many of our rain events and heavier snowfall when it's cold enough for snow. And those are the impacts that I've noticed the most.
But even just when it's cold enough for snow, I mean, here in the New York metro area, we had our first significant snowfall or recordable snowfall just a couple weeks ago, and that was the first one in 2 years.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like my colleagues up in, Boston and New England, you guys were getting hit every other day, it seemed. So, I mean, it does seem like there is, and it's different, right? I don't remember a single 2 year period growing up where we didn't have a snow day or had to break out the shovels.
It does go in cycles. The 80s around here were famously low on snow. That was a decade where there really wasn't much at all for about 10, 12 years in a row, where we didn't have really any big winters at all. The difference that I see is that the 80s were at least cold when it wasn't snowing.
Yeah.
It was pretty cold out, and we had long ice seasons, and you could at least say, oh, we got good ice skating. Now, when we have low snow years, it's also just really warm because, in general, obviously, climate change is increasing our global temperature in the Northeast. So, winter is our fastest warming season. And so, when it's cold enough for a snowstorm, you can still get some bangers. And we've had some huge snowstorms the last 15 years. You can almost call it the golden age of snowstorms. I can't recall any other stretch where we've had more big snowstorms in a small period. Obviously, the last few years, that has not been the case, as I think we're getting some mean reversion. Weather likes to head back to the averages. Over time. So I'm not surprised at all that we're having a down stretch here over the past few years. But as the winters warm up, the stakes are a little bit higher because if you're it's not snowing, then it's really not even winter. This year we had an extreme lack of ice. People who are into ice fishing and just, getting out and doing some ice skating, some places never froze at all. So it was an unusually warm winter, and I do think that's a trend you can kind of bank on. We're continuing to see our winters warming up, as all seasons are, but winter, for the most part, has shown the biggest change.
When you think about that historically, but now you're also thinking about and seeing the data towards warmer winters, what should we all be thinking about for 5 years from now, 10 years in from now? Like, is, outside hockey going away? Like, does it have the potential to? I'm not trying to make this into a Dennis Quaid movie or something, or dismiss it by any stretch. But what does that mean, not only, I guess, for recreation and even our psyche, but just for the human experience as it gets warmer? Are there things that we should be looking forward to, or are there things that we should be really concerned about?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's a loaded question. I thought it was interesting.
I don't mean it that way. Yeah, but yeah.
No, I was going to say, I have some friends who are looking to buy a house near a ski mountain. They're big skiers. They've been saving up. They're like, we want to go, and that's going to be our winter thing. And it was interesting to me that when I talked to them about it, they ended up picking up around Sunday River in Maine. And they said the main reason, A, a nice mountain, but B, they felt it was the most insulated from climate change over the next 20 years. And they shied away from places like southern Vermont that are farther south, and getting more rain and ice events versus the snowfall. And it's not like we had a conversation about it. They just said, you know what? I think it's a better investment to be farther north. And they're not wrong. Our winter pastimes, the season's getting shorter. It's not going to be the case every year. I certainly think that after a period of down winters of snow, we're going to see a string of bigger winters again with snowfall. But in general, the long-term trend is less ice, shorter skating season, less ice fishing, driving cars out onto the lakes and ponds. That's slowly becoming a thing of the past, unless you're way far north or on a very particular type of pond.
Yeah.
Winnipesaukee is a big one, and it takes a long time and a lot of cold to freeze Winnipesaukee, and it only froze for one day this year, for technical ice in, and they're just about melted out right now, which would be the earliest on record.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm a big fan of these biological markers instead of like looking at charts and graphs and numbers, and people say, statistics. Well, you really just have to look outside. If you remember what winter was like in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, and how much more ice you had, how much easier it was to go skating out in the ponds, how much you could depend on better snow making days or just regular natural snow at some of the ski areas, it's changed, and it should continue to change. Not every year, it's not a straight line. You're not going to expect it to be a little bit warmer, a little less snowy every year. It's not how it works.
Right.
But in the long game, Yeah, it's getting tricky. It's why so many of these ski areas now you can see instead of just skiing, it's, mountain biking all summer and tram rides throughout the summer and water parks and, blues festivals and whatever you can do outside of depending on snow to diversify and protect yourself because the winters are tricky.
This is probably a loaded question. And I don't have a habit of asking these, I don't think. But when you're citing history, when you're citing, like biological information, the charts and graphs, the everything else, the science behind it, how frustrating is it when you, as a trained meteorologist who looks at climate science, gets hit with somebody who's like, well, actually, this isn't all that big. It shows up with their first page of Google conspiracy theory nonsense.
It is frustrating. And, it's not just climate, it's on a whole range of topics. There's basically, if you just looked across the country, whatever the majority of people think, 30% will just believe the opposite out of spite. So, if you could say puppies and rainbows are nice, like, actually, I hate dogs and the rainbows are too bright. Like, there's a large contingent of people who will just take the other side just because
Sure.
that's the way they are, no matter what. And I don't know how you change minds or if you can. I mean, a lot of these, some of the same people that I see around here are the same ones who are like, climate change isn't real, and then complain that they couldn't go out in the lake all winter because it wasn't frozen. I'm like, do you see the connection here?
I'm physically pointing to your surroundings and the ambient temperature right now and showing you, yeah.
Yeah, so that can be frustrating, but all you can do is, put out good information, try to share the best and also just change with time if you have to. When I started in weather, I was pretty skeptical of global warming, man-made global warming. I wasn't a firm believer that was happening. And then over time, you do some research, you watch the trends, and then you're like, well, obviously this is a real thing. This is happening. And you can change your worldview. It's okay to get new information on anything, whether it's weather or anything else in your life. And when presented with new information, say, you know what, I need to adjust a couple of the ways that I think. And it's tough to do. That's not like human nature. That's not something that we want to do. No one wants to think that they're wrong or say that they're wrong.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in the beer space, and we should start talking about beer in a minute, but
Yeah, is
obviously in
this
the
a
beer
beer
space,
podcast?
not apparently not. Last week we had spirits, so I'm just I think I'm going through my midlife podcast crisis phase right now of spirits and weather, and next week I think we're going to do psychics and tarot cards. That's actually not what we're going to do next week. But I mean, we were talking about recreation as well, but in the beer space, there's obviously a lot of worry about climate change, about, well, where are hops going to be grown and what's going to be happening with, the malt fields, what's going to be happening with, just where to grow raw ingredients. And I'm just wondering from your perch and your perspective on what maybe you've seen weather doing in relationship to the food that's grown, the food that we consume.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the region. Some places getting wetter on the average, and some places getting drier. I mentioned earlier about the hydrological cycle and basically the
Yeah.
extremes and rain to dry. That's really a huge challenge for growers. When it's all just boom or bust and back and forth, that has become a major issue for a lot of people around the world. And another thing that I've noticed when we talk about those warm winters, it's tricky because when things are emerging in the springtime, it takes weeks of an anomalously warm pattern to get things ahead of schedule. It takes, 2 to 3 hours to ruin everything. Because all you need is one cold hit and a few hours in the 20s, and bye-bye. There goes everything. So that has become almost a perennial occurrence, I feel like, where somewhere in the country, everything's out, it's way too early, then you get a normal freeze, and there goes half the crop of something.
Yeah.
So it's definitely very challenging. Farming is never easy, whether it's hops or corn or, peaches or whatever the case may be. There's always something coming at you. Disease, pests, weather whims every year.
And
I
fires
don't
now
know.
too.
And fires as well. So there's a lot of hybridization work that goes on at extension programs across the country, where they're always looking at kind of making crops that are more resistant to drought, more resistant to mildew, all these things that can break down different fruits, vegetables, hops, all those sorts of things. So you're kind of looking for a bit of a scientific answer to some of the problems that we're seeing.
So your X bio, your Twitter bio, the first word that people are met, you are New England famous, you're on the national news, you are known for weather, and the first word that you introduce yourself with in your online persona bio is beer. And then you get into weather and sports and everything else in between. So where does, I mean, that's a conscious choice. That's the, I don't even think that my first word is beer in my bio. So where does beer come into play in the life of Eric Fisher? So much so that it is the first thing you want people to know about you.
I think I wrote that in my 20s. Maybe I should update that a little bit.
All right, that totally tracks. Yeah.
Maybe a different time in life. But you know what? It's a long, winding road, if you will. I don't know what your like gateway into enjoying beer at some point was, and by no means do I overindulge. It's kind of the nice thing about the evening shift. You don't have anything at all to drink during the week because you get home at midnight and I go to bed.
Yeah.
Good for your health.
It is. Yeah.
My gateway, and don't laugh. At some age in my youth, undisclosed age, my friend and I, we got really into Magic Hat, up in Vermont. Magic Hat
Number
is
nine.
Magic Hat number nine.
Yeah, the apricot wheat. That was a formidable beer for so many people, especially along the East Coast here. Yeah.
Yeah, when you're, before you're into like beer, it's like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. They have the cool stuff under the cap and all that. And that was the one that we would kind of seek out. And if we were having ourselves a nice little afternoon, play some golf, we would try that. And I said, yeah, this beer thing's pretty good. And that was kind of the time where a lot of the craft breweries were opening up in New England, and Hill Farmstead became, kind of a holy grail
Hill
place where you wanted to
Farmstead,
get
yeah.
some of their stuff. My sister had moved to Vermont, so I definitely visited her a few times to go check that out. And I think, I don't know. I think when I lived in Atlanta for a few years, it's when things were really booming. There were some great craft breweries and great bars that had all sorts of stuff from across the country. And it was kind of that point where a lot of these were just starting to kind of scale up. So a lot of what you were buying could get, we just got two of Hop Slam just came into the store. You get two at a time and they'll be gone in 15 minutes. And like, you can hop
Oh,
in the
yeah.
car and go down the street. So it was kind of a fun time to be into beer.
It was.
And I had a neighbor who just so happened down there to go to Harvard Dental School with a friend up here. And then he was down in Atlanta, and his friend who's up here was a brewer at Hill Farmstead. And then he left Hill Farmstead to go work at this new place called Treehouse. And at this point, it was basically like in a garage. And he would send us growlers, like wrapped up and taped up and put into suitcases, and he'd ship them down to Atlanta. So I'd get this call from the neighbor, and he'd say, it just got here. Bring the cigars. And we'd go out to the back deck, and we'd like have some cigars, and we'd open up this Treehouse beer and said, this is the best stuff that's ever been made. And so that was probably the biggest moment for really getting into craft beer. By the time I moved back home to Boston, they were just starting in Munson at that basically like shed, and
Sure.
a tornado scar in Munson. And it was still very limited. And then, of course, we know what happened after that. Probably the fastest, most successful scaling up of a brewery I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's do you say, I imagine you've gone, you've visited, you probably still have a relationship to that beer. Do you feel, because that's such a unique perspective of having those early beers, having the growlers of this, which, I mean, just seems so quaint these
It's
days.
like going to see, Bruce Springsteen in a bar in Cambridge before it was Bruce Springsteen. You get to have that experience before everyone knows about it.
Do you still, when you taste Treehouse now, are there vestiges of that original batch, or are those original days in your mind, or has it just changed so much? I mean, Springsteen hasn't gone through his, like, Sinatra thing where he's doing concept albums or anything, but it's are there, do you still see or taste any of the same things from back in the day?
It's different now. It's still really good beer, and some of the best out there, I think. But it's also, back in 2010, 2011, there wasn't much good beer. There's a lot of beer out there for sure, but there wasn't anything like that. So when you had to try it, it like blew away anything else you were getting at the store, picking up for a barbecue or anything like that. It was a completely different product. And over the intervening decade, so many breweries have put out really good beer. And so the competition has kind of met the challenge and risen up. So when you have it compared to other stuff, it's still very good. But the whole field has gotten stronger as well. So I don't know if you can never go back. Like if you saw your favorite band when they were just climbing and you go see them now, I'm sure it's a great time, but you probably don't still have the same powerful emotion of the first time when you knew you had something special. You were witnessing something special. But yeah, I mean, obviously it's still a go-to. They're great people. I've done a couple of book signings there. They've been very supportive along the way. It's been kind of like a mutual relationship. And certainly I still load up when I go by. It's nice that they're down on Cape Cod now too.
Yeah, it is. It's been a nice addition. I'm wondering, I actually Magic Hat has me thinking, because I was just up in Rochester last weekend, and Fifco is now the global owner. They're the ones that make Genesee, and they do Seagram's Escapes, FMBs, and the Lipton hard teas, and other things like that. And they bought Magic Hat a couple years ago, and I was talking with one of their brewers when I was there, and I said, we're drinking Jenny Cream Ale, and I said, hey, what's going on with Magic Hat these days? And I got this blank stare back, and a little bit of an uncomfortable shift from the PR team that was around, and teased out they haven't done anything with that brand in a year.
It's kind of
It's
sad.
just it's effectively dead. And it is really sad, because it was that beer that I think really did shape. I mean, I drank a ton of it in college, and I think it was one of those early beers from my wife, who really enjoyed it, for everything that it did, and now just to sort of have it gone is just kind of sad.
It's funny how something that was, very popular at the time, and why didn't they evolve with the time or kind of move it forward? I guess it just depends on the brand and the stewardship of each product. Some places have really kept up great work for as long as they've been in existence, and sometimes things are a little bit forgotten.
But it is nice to have those memories in your mind's eye, to sort of think back and remember who you were then, and what you were drinking, and good times that you had, and everything. And I imagine there's correlations to the weather in that as well. Of like, when people talk about perfect days, or they talk about great times that they had, or cool experiences, the weather usually comes into play with that as
Absolutely.
well.
Yeah, you have those, what do they call flashbulb memories? Those moments in time where you remember what the sky looked like or what the temperature was, the way the waves sounded on a certain day. Absolutely. Weather's a big part of the sensory experience of every day, provided you spend enough time outside. I find a lot of joy in the different whims of the weather and kind of tracking the changes, the way the seasons move up here, up in New England. Of course, we are pretty strongly well-defined seasons. And this time of year, I love the little walks where you notice the plants that are starting to wake up and poke out of the ground. You kind of compare it to different years and how things change from season to season. It's a beautiful thing.
We're getting into crocus season right now, and I'm looking out of a window, and I see the first daffodil in the yard, which is probably a little early, but
Yeah, I
it's
noticed our first daffodils here in Boston yesterday.
oh gosh. Okay. Yeah, that's it's a little early for that. I was thinking in advance of this conversation as well of the correlation between beer and weather. And obviously, what we were just talking about, it's, if it's a beautiful day, you're going to be outside on the patio or, at the beer garden, or how weather can set the different mood for what it is that you're going to be drinking. If it's storming outside, you're going to maybe have something darker, roastier, or stout, something like that. Or, nice day, you're going to have an IPA or whatever. But there's also, it's a common ground for people to start a conversation on. And taking, the politicalness out of it, the science out of it for just a minute. The thing that I've always enjoyed covering about beer in the last, 20 or so years is that everybody starts on the same page if they're at a brewery. They're there because they want to drink a beer that's made where they're drinking. So you can come from different backgrounds. You can come from different political beliefs, from religious beliefs, whatever. You're starting at square one with beer. And then I think we can find and build things from there where we actually have more in common than maybe divides us. It gets harder with science and politics and everything. But weather's sort of that same way, right? Like if we're all outside experiencing something at the same time, it's that conversation start. It's that first, it's the awkward conversation with your barber that they have 25 times a day of, like, boy, it's sunny outside today, that kind of thing. It's how you greet your neighbors and all of that. Is, from your perspective, is there a, I don't know, does weather do more to bring us together than pull us apart?
And this is the justification I give to our producers every day when they're like, "How much time do you need?" And I'm like, "Well, I need this." They go, "Well," I said, "Hey, it's the only thing in your newscast that affects everybody. You're gonna have a Patriot story. Not everyone cares about football. You're gonna have, a big news story in one town, but some people in the other part of the state might not care. Weather is the only thing you can talk about that affects everybody, everyone's day, everyone's life, their plans, the rhythm of the day. It all comes down to that." So I think weather is like the ultimate shared experience. And, from a TV perspective, obviously we know that people are not necessarily watching the news as much as they did back in, the 80s, where everyone would sit down for, each particular newscast or at least one collective newscast. And there are really only a couple of places to even get it, which is why we had that shared experience. And I think in the world of TV now, the only things left that are shared, consistent shared experiences are sports and weather. In terms of live TV, live severe weather, or even just, a run-of-the-mill storm or a big game, those are the things where everyone kind of comes together to watch one thing. Look at what the Weather Channel does when there's a hurricane making landfall or a tornado outbreak. I mean, everyone's tuning in to watch that. And so weather is a unifier. I think it's just a common ground for everyone. Everyone has different opinions on it. It's a very subjective thing. What you think is great, someone else might not like. So you can talk about, those differences. And I mean, everything you do every day is based on what the weather is going to throw your way. I mean, I think we do think about it more in the Eastern U.S. than the Western U.S. The West obviously not having as much weather. I don't think people really think about it every day in the same sense that we do here, where it could literally be, snowing one day and then 70 the next, and then back to wind and then a pouring rainstorm. And there's a lot of variety around here. But I do love that weather is something that, I can weave into a story every night. I can kind of feel what everyone else is planning and thinking and discuss it and hopefully try to help them out, make the most of it. I'm a big believer in hitting your spots because you can't control the weather, but you better make the most of it. So when there's a nice day, even if there's a nice day in half the area, I usually go to that nice half and make some plans there. If it's going to be a snowy winter, I'm going skiing. If it's going to be a quiet winter, then I'll be putzing around the garden. You just got to make the most of whatever happens. And so my main focus when I'm doing the forecast every night is telling people, here's your option. I think this would be a good way to plan your life, to plan your weekend, to plan your work week.
I like that. I like that, that sunny disposition on things. It's as you were saying that, I was going back to, being 23, being in the Midwest, doing these daily weather stories and outside and talking to people, and vaguely, as sarcastic as I can be and as cynical as I can be, had vague fondness for just being out and talking to people about the weather and not having to talk to them about, the latest dead body or something. So thank you for changing my perspective on that. I like that. I want to ask you the green door question. So the premise is on the television show, The Good Place, in the final season, they introduce a concept of the green door that the characters can walk through and be anywhere they want, doing whatever they want to be doing. And so, if we had a green door on our plane of existence and you could walk through it and be at any pub or any brewery anywhere in the world, where would you want to go? Who would you want to be with? And what would you like to be drinking?
Oh my Lord. That is, oh boy, that's a very, very tough question. Any brewery anywhere in the world. Well, who I want to be with is easy. I would like to be with my wife. And hopefully some other good friends, but some of my happiest times are when we just get a little bit of time together and it's just the two of us. We have a couple good drinks, play a couple games, get to catch up and chat, outside of the craziness of life. Those are a lot of my happy days. So that one's easier. What am I drinking? Is it a cop out to say it's weather dependent?
No, not at all.
Because if
But
I'm down in the
in this scenario,
Keys,
you can pick the weather.
okay. Well, if I'm a warm weather guy. I'm a beach guy. I'm an island guy. So I guess I'm somewhere tropical. I'm having a lager if it's tropical. And if I had to pick a spot anywhere, geez. I don't know. I don't even know.
There's
Sorry,
no
this is
wrong
terrible.
answers. No, that's fine.
Australia pops to mind. Costa Rica pops to mind. St. John pops to mind. Like places that are warm and relaxed and a place where you can just hang out. I guess. As much as I would enjoy being in a nice, like, cozy pub in Ireland or something like that, I'd probably lean tropical.
I like that. I'm just thinking of. This thought has never actually occurred to me before. You can't leave your work behind even when you're on vacation, right? Because
Never.
all everybody worries about when they're on vacation is the weather. Is it gonna, if you're on an island, is it going to be nice today? And burdened with the knowledge that you have, can you ever fully relax on vacation?
I'm gonna have to go to a place with very little weather. Otherwise, no. And my poor wife, I drive her crazy because I'm so intense about making the most of every day and trying to like
Sure.
maximize. I'm like, well, it's March 10th, so this is like peak maple sugaring time. So I feel like we need to go to a sugar house if the weather's not great, and if it's nicer, we'll go for a nice like hike beforehand. If we plan trips, like it's all climatology based. Going places based on exactly the time of year, not necessarily like maybe when it's the easiest time to take time off. I'm going to go when I can get the most out of the weather. Like we're going to the eclipse in Texas,
Oh,
and
sure.
I
Oh,
could
in
just drive to
Texas.
Vermont
I was going to
because,
say, yeah.
well, the climatology says there's a much better chance of clear skies in Texas than Vermont. So I'm playing the weather dice. Like I have to plan around that. If we ever go to the Cape, I'm always thinking about the weather because it's a difficult place.
Yes.
It's a place to love, but it's a love-hate relationship. So you're always watching fog and, wind direction and everything down on Cape Cod.
So Texas is where eclipse watchers should be going.
So anything can happen on any given day. We know that. Last April
Caveat,
8th
yeah.
was completely clear in New England. That's very rare. So the highest chance of clouds anywhere in the country along the path is northern New England and upstate New York. So you'd have a chance. It's just not a great chance. Texas by far has the best chance of clear skies. You could have a wildfire or a dust storm or a tornado outbreak as well. So it's not a given. I also just felt it's even more easy to navigate. Like if I had to drive 4 hours in some direction, it's a lot easier to drive across Texas than it is to navigate around the hills of New England.
Sure.
So if we had to do a last minute, oh crap, we go somewhere else, it'd be easier to do there. Also, it's just like our warm weather getaway this year. Instead of going to a beach somewhere for a long weekend, we're going there instead.
I dig it. Well, a lot of breweries are doing that are in the path of totality are doing special beer releases or festivals or events for it. So I'm sure you'll be able to find something that is new and rare and unique to that event. So I
Hey, Hill
hope
Farmstead's in the path. That'd be a good
I
place.
know it's gonna be jammed. It's gonna be jammed up there. So you mentioned that you like to make the most out of every day and everything that you're doing. So thank you for taking time out of your day today to have this conversation. I love hearing about the weather and talking to folks who do it, and I'm deeply appreciative of your time.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to have these conversations and get to branch out a little bit from just the hour by hour forecast, whatever the case may be during the evening.
Who would you like to hear on the show? Who inside or outside of the beer industry would you like to hear on the air? Tell me all about it. My email is John Hall, that's JohnHoll, at allaboutbeer.com. That's also how you can get in touch with questions, comments, or, as I say, guest suggestions. A reminder, please go visit allaboutbeer.com. There you can check out the podcast page, the merch page, and read great new content, as well as the archives going back to 1979. And don't forget, you can follow All About Beer on social media at All About Beer. And if you're interested in supporting journalism in the beer space, email us at info@allaboutbeer.com or go to patreon.com/allaboutbeer. Please don't forget, All About Beer has a podcast channel now. Search and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Steal the Spear has new episodes every Monday. The BYO Nano podcast comes out on the 15th of every month. And check out probrewer.com each week for original articles from the All About Beer team. As for this show, Nate Schweber does the music, Jeff Quinn designed our logo, and I'm John Hall. New episodes release every Wednesday, and that's when I'll be back again to drink beer and to think beer.